All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Engineering Entrepreneur Podcast, episode 152. And as you're always, this is your host, Scott Tarsi, and I run CADDesignHelp.com. Please go to my website, again, CADDesignHelp.com. And once you sign up and put your email in there, we'll send you a free PDF, the top four mistakes inventors make, and you'll keep updated on everything. Let's see. I still have my online course. I haven't had a lot of people sign up for that lately, but you will learn a lot of good info on, you know, how I did what I did, start becoming an engineering entrepreneur. Please leave me a review on iTunes. That helps a bunch. I don't think I've seen one in a while. And any feedback or requests, my email is info@caddesignhelp.com. All right, our guest this week is Greg Wilson, and he is a civil engineer based in Canada. And following in his family's footsteps of entrepreneurship, he ventured away from a traditional engineering career to work in a hybrid capacity as both an engineer and an entrepreneur. And he has found his footing by living with a foot in each world. So actually kind of similar to me. So I'll hand the mic over in a second. But I think most listeners of the show know that I've been running my business. But the last 4 years have been rough. So I've actually taken on, well, multiple side gigs. One of them, like, being a distributor for this, like, energy drink company. But just kind of random things that basically are my own business. And I can work on my own schedule, which is huge. Like, that way I can still obviously run my CAD design business whenever I should do have some work and have some meetings and stuff. So we kind of are very similar in that. So Greg, let's just like do the timeline thing. Like, okay, you grew up in Canada, talk about, you know, high school to college, college to working world, and take us through the highlights of that.
The highlights, the whole journey. Thanks for having me.
The whole journey, but you know, the highlights, not every single detail.
Yeah, well, and I think that this is why I think I have a different perspective. I call myself a non-engineer because partly because of sort of my journey into my career as an engineer. So after high school, I did a diploma. I guess in the States you call it an associate's degree in civil. Civil engineering technology diploma. And then after that, I actually went to the States. I went to the University of Wyoming very randomly from Canada to do, I took both civil engineering and architectural engineering. And I always had dreamed as a child of being an architect. And that was sort of my goal. And I used engineering, I guess, as a backup plan to have, if architecture didn't pan out, I'd still have a good solid degree to hopefully get a job as an engineer. So I went to the University of Wyoming and did those two degrees concurrently. And then sort of during that process and starting to work on my architecture portfolio and interviewing architects about sort of where to go to school, where to apply, what to put in my applications and portfolio and things like that, I realized a few things that changed my career path greatly from where I thought it was going to go, that architects don't necessarily make a lot of money. Step one, which as
that's
a university
crazy to me, because that's still such like just like in engineering sort of like that too. It's like,
yes,
you do get like actually a pretty good starting pay, but then what you realize is you don't increase, like you literally don't make more than like, let's just say 2% a raise per year, unless like you literally put in like 20 years and to get your boss's job. And then even then, it's maybe a 20-25% jump, which is like, after that many years of like having no raises, you're so far behind. Like compared to like somebody who, I don't know, does sales or like investment banking or just, there's so many other careers where like the how you change over time is so much more rapid, or at least could be. Like there's really no way in engineering, like at a corporation, at least from my experience, to really make significantly more. Like there's no incentive pay. There's nothing you can do. You kind of just, this is what you're getting paid. And yes, it's good at the beginning, but like over time, everyone kind of catches up to you, like from other careers, and then surpasses.
Absolutely. And that was, I think, the biggest thing that made me sort of disenfranchised with engineering once I started working and realizing that exact thing, you don't make as much. I feel like in engineering school, they sort of fill you with a lot of tales. You know, they tell you how important engineers are to the world and how much money you're going to make and you're going to change the world and you have the world at your fingertips as an engineer and all of these things, which some are true, but the pay thing certainly isn't. And I always joke that civil engineering is like the poor man's engineering.
I think civil engineering and mechanical personally, but I mean, I guess I'm mechanically minded. So like for me, like mechanical engineering was definitely easier. Like I took courses. I don't think I took any civil, but I definitely took like electrical engineering, and I found that stuff so abstract and confusing compared to mechanical that I was like, I'm glad I didn't do electrical. By the way, I think they make more money, but yeah, I agree with all the things you're saying, but like thinking back, this was like I graduated in 07 from Virginia Tech, 2007. But I was thinking back on it, and it was, I'm trying to say, oh, the amount of money. So it's like I like during school, I worked in the student center and, you know, fast food or whatever, like random jobs for like literally $7 an hour back then or something. And then all of a sudden, I'm making 55,000 a year. You divide it out over the hour, like you're making like $25 an hour or more, and it seems like an astronomical amount of money because I've never made anything over seven. But then you look at it like later on and you look at like how much costs just to live. And then you're, and then especially like you look at these friends that go into sales or some other type of career and how they keep making more. And then you're like, oh, this didn't really work out. And it's like, there are those type of people that like, they're fine with like that salary. They want that like guaranteed paycheck, like real stable job. Like there's like all of that is for sure there. But like, if you really truly want to like improve your life, like you need more money, like you just can't get it from like a corporate engineering job.
No, and that's exactly my exact journey. I worked for a consulting firm after I graduated. I moved back to Canada to find a job, and I founded this consulting job in a niche that I didn't even think about. I didn't even know existed, restoration engineering. I had no concept of what it was, but I needed a job, so I said yes, I'm in. So, and then working there, I realized, you know, it's a consultant firm, so it's sort of, I don't know, works a little bit differently than if you're working for a massive engineering firm or sort of on the client side or things like that. But I quickly learned how challenging the quote golden handcuffs of a job are and sort of the carrot sticks that they hang over you that, well, if you stay this long, you get this bonus, and you stay that long, you get that bonus. And, you know, the firm that I worked for had a share buy-in structure as well. So there was these incentivization sort of programs in place
You know
to.
what's funny is that all the places I worked, they didn't even have that. It was like literally, they never even said anything about incentives at all. They basically it was just implied that like if you work here long enough, there's a some percentage chance you'll get the boss's job. But it's
Exactly.
like
Maybe. Yeah.
that is such I'm trying to find the right word, like a pipe dream scenario, like such low probability. Really, it was more like what people realize in engineering, it's like you just switch companies and make more money. Like that's the only way. Like people would literally, there was when I worked for Bosch in New Bern, there was two dishwashing manufacturing plants, competitors across the street from each other, essentially. And people would just quit one, go work at the other for a few years, quit that one, come back. And you could do that about three or four times, but then you hit your max. Like they're just not willing to pay anymore
Yes.
unless you're going to be at a higher role. And that all came down to either who retired or died,
Well,
basically.
and when I
So.
started working, there was when I started work, I graduated in 2012, and when I started working, there was a huge boom where I was working, and they hired after me, they hired I think seven or eight other engineers, and the firm at the time only had about 20 or 30 people working at it. So it's pretty
Oh
small.
wow!
They
So
grew,
it went from small to big, like or big,
yeah,
like doubled in size. That's
real
tough for a
fast.
company. Yeah.
And so there's a lot of people like me that, you know, the quote sort of like, I guess I'm in the middle of being a millennial. And there was all the like the high ups in the company were all like, oh, you millennials just change jobs all the time. You don't understand. I was like, yes, but there's a reason. Like
Right.
we are coming out, like, you know, I didn't personally in my work experience suffer during the financial crisis in 2008-ish, but I the aftermath of that was still, you know, very apparent in the industry. And my job was very linked to the construction industry. And, you know, the construction industry, I think, is a great litmus test for how a market is doing and how an economy is doing.
For sure.
And
Yeah.
those kinds of things became very apparent to me, like the pay structure, the cost of construction, the quality of construction, all these sorts of things that I think have like sort of were like the entry point for my current sort of thesis on life about how I perceive everything and question everything, and how I'm looking big picture now from like a business, financial, entrepreneurial lens at every problem, at sort of things people tell me on construction sites, things like that. I look at the world so much differently, sort of having both those lenses. And I think have sort of growing up my career through this time period where people were switching jobs all the time and it was just sort of the norm. Yet there was this kind of scolding by the old guard, the old men's group in engineering that, you know, it was bad to do that. But it was sort of
my dad was a chemical engineer, and you know the reason they stuck at companies is because they actually provided like retirement benefits, like actual real ones, not just, oh, here's a 401k you can invest your money in, which I could do anyways, by the way. Like, I don't need you to have that. So they all had pensions. So it's like, how can you even compare your generation to ours when there's no incentive for us to stick around? Like, they were so different. Like, the other one was like, hey, if you work here for 40 years, we're going to pay you your salary the rest of your life. Like, yeah, I would stick around for that too.
Absolutely. And I think I had another aha moment a few years ago. I was talking with my manager at the time, and we were discussing, and she had started her career exactly 10 years before I had, and her starting salary was $55,000 10 years before mine, and my starting salary was $55,000. And I was like, so in 10 years, the industry standard for new hires has not moved.
Yeah, and that is eye-opening, really. I did not – yeah, because she seems – how old are you? Like around 30, I'm guessing?
35, yeah.
Okay, so yeah, you're 5-6 years younger than me. So, yeah, for sure. Like, my starting salary was, like, right about what hers was. I assumed that it moved up. I did not realize that it had stayed so stagnant.
And
so that's really interesting.
Yeah, and I think about the industry as a whole. I think, as I said before, I'm, like, a non-engineer. I truly think that engineering school needs to change fundamentally. I think that it should be a trade. I think it should be treated as a trade. I think you should have to go to school for a prescribed amount of time and then have a prescribed amount of work experience and vice versa. And it should take you, you know, 8 years to do that. And you graduate with your professional engineering designation and your degree at the same time. And you have money in the bank and you have work experience and you actually understand the practicality of engineering. And I think
100%. It's almost like going and doing all this theory. It's like, what's the point of it? Like
have you ever used calculus?
Learned thermodynamics. Like, I understanding the very top level of thermodynamics makes some sense, but like having to go through all these classes of doing the equations, who cares?
Yeah.
There's no reason to ever do this. We have computers to figure all this out. You just need to know the absolute fundamentals. Like,
and I think
so
particularly
dumb.
For me with civil engineering, like I deal with things that don't move, and things in civil engineering should never move. And that's the point. And so, you know, I don't need to understand necessarily for my job the theory behind everything. And I think with my more technical background, doing a 2-year associate's degree first, and then doing some work experience and then going to university, I think gave me a different perspective, especially with the construction field and working on construction sites and understanding how engineers are perceived in the field. Really changed my perspective and kind of gave me a different path, I think, in my, quote, engineering career.
You know, one thing if I could go back and change, like knowing what I know now, is that I wouldn't even get a degree in engineering. Like, not that I regret it necessarily, but what I would do is go learn how to become an electrician. Like, exactly what you said, like learn an actual trade, start my own business. There's so few people doing that.
Yes.
I could literally name my price practically.
Yes.
Like, it's so hard to find in most cities a plumber, an electrician, like somebody who's actually knows what they're doing in these things, because no one, I mean, now it's catching up, but there was a period and everyone was going to college and doing all these other things. And it's like, that was being lacked. And that's actual practical stuff. Like, if your power's not working or something, people are going to pay no matter what the economy is doing. Mm-hmm. To get that fixed, right?
And
they're going to do that.
I think that's coming to a head. Anecdotally, I have some experience with that and talking with young engineers. Like, I had I really enjoyed mentoring young engineers in, like, just fresh out of university or still in engineering school. And I've been able to mentor, you know, well over a dozen at this point. And I've asked all of them, I poll all of them after their end of their summer job or whatever their position is. And I've only had 2 out of the 10 say that they would do engineering again, which I think is very telling of the industry. And I myself, I would 100% I think in hindsight, have done carpentry. I love building things, and that's how my mind sort of works. And I talk with carpenters and other tradespeople on construction sites all the time. And, you know, they started making good money when they were like 19, 20, 21 years old. Meanwhile, I was still, you know, shopping away in engineering school.
So they're making good money and we're going into debt. And then you multiply that over 4 years. And if they invest it well, like they could just be ahead of you forever.
And I think this idea that to be successful, you need to go to university is a really unhealthy way for our society to look at schooling and our economies and markets.
I think that's changing too, but that was not the case 20 years ago. And I was like, at least not for my parents. My dad was like, you're going to college. And I was like, okay, it makes sense. And the other thing is too, like not enough, at least as a teenager, I never thought about money. Like if I could tell my parents one thing, I've been like, show me a spreadsheet of like what life costs. Like I have to get in touch with reality that I'm leaving at 18 and like, what is it going to like, how much do I need to make to like cover everything and have some left over? Right. And it's like, you don't think about any of that stuff. Like, I just go to college. I'll get a job when I'm done. And that's what I did.
And I
just did it.
My parents had went to, again, like did a 2-year program and they met doing that after high school. But, you know, my parents and for the most part, the majority of my family, like my parents' age and beyond, didn't go to university. So, you know, it was always not that my parents forced university on me and my siblings, but it was always sort of recommended path that we would do a university degree. And engineering, you know, all my siblings did very practical, I say, university degrees, like engineering or accounting or geology or science, like environmental sciences, things like that. But at the same time, I think that comes from my entrepreneurial spirit comes in, as my parents were always self-employed. My mom's dad was self-employed and had a very successful parents business, right? As did my parents. And I grew up in that world and not really understanding how like a normal job worked because my parents had a very, very flexible schedule and they worked all the time, but they worked around our schedule as kids. And I think that was another big eye-opener when I started working, is understanding that like I couldn't just take vacation whenever I wanted to. I didn't have that.
If you're like most Americans, you get 10 days a year. At least that's how my job was. Hey, here's your 10 days a year. You get sick. Well, there's one of your days. You got to go to the DMV. There's one of your days.
My mom made fun of me because I didn't realize, I was so naive when I started working. I didn't realize that 2 weeks vacation only meant 10 days.
Right. It doesn't include weekends. You already got the weekends off.
So and it was, I think that's what I always had this nagging feeling as I was working in this consulting firm in a very traditional, it was 8-to-5 job. You were encouraged to stay after 5. You were encouraged to do lots of work. And it was very like that old kind of guard mentality. And I felt this nagging feeling the entire time working there that this wasn't for me. I wanted to be my own boss. I wanted to work, make something of myself and for myself. And it came to a head kind of with that financial conversation we were having earlier, and that sort of led me to take a jump and explore some other opportunities. And it was super scary, but at the same time, I realized that the traditional engineering job was not for me, and that I always joke that I'm not a very good employee. I don't follow directions very well. I'm very much a free thinker and working with our business.
I got in trouble with that a lot. And another thing I was going to make a statement on was, you're talking about how hard you're working. It's like, if I'm going to work really, really hard, I'm not going to work really, really hard to make someone else rich, to make some corporation rich. Like my dad, he got paid well. Like I'm not going to criticize him, but he told me he worked for Alcoa for 40 years, whatever it was, his entire career, same company. He has 25 patents. He got paid $1 per patent, which is why I don't even know why that matters. But he said he saved the company hundreds of millions of dollars. And I'm like, how much of that did they give you? Like, not that much, relatively speaking. Yeah, they paid him well, but not $1 million a year well. Not even like $250,000 a year well. I mean, it was a while ago. He's been retired for 10 years. But like, at the end of the day, like if he was working for himself or whatever, or this was his company, that would have been hundreds of millions of dollars into his bank account. And it wasn't. It was hundreds of millions of dollars into their bank account. And they sort of rewarded him, I guess. But like, I just think like how much more he could have made And the whole quality of life thing of like being in control of your schedule if you've been working
Absolutely.
for yourself. So,
And
you know.
that's my number one thing is I've realized in the last few years of doing this sort of hybrid mentality, especially in the last year, is how much I value my time autonomy, that I make my own schedule, that I decide when I want to work, whether it's, 8 p.m. or 8 a.m. I love the flexibility of being able to make those decisions and being able to, in the middle of the day, run errands or, pick up my nephew or whatever it is. And the thought of going back to an 8 to 5 job is very challenging for
Oh,
me to
I
even
mean, I can't, I'll be
conceptualize.
honest, I can't do it. Like, even when things were really bad, like over the last few years, I was driving Uber. I was like, I will do anything except sit in an office. Like I'll just sell my house and live on the street before I'm gonna go sit in an office. Like that is literally, it gave me more stress
Yes.
and anxiety and just total just unhappiness
I think that's.
than being just forced to be at this time, at this location. And really,
Yeah.
no matter like what I needed or didn't need to do, it's like you're just going to be here regardless. And like, I just could never do it again. Like that is literally my worst. That is my worst nightmare, would be having to do that again.
I think that's the true entrepreneurial spirit when you can't you can't stomach the idea of doing that. And I mean, I work way more now than I did when I was working 8 to 5. And I think this is the other thing is the 8 to 5 40-hour work week is such complete nonsense and is so unproductive and ineffective, largely for actual productivity. No one can work 8 hours a day straight. I
No,
certainly cannot.
100%, 100%.
That I think realistically, when I am true to myself and true to how my productivity works, I maybe get 4 to 5 really good productive hours out of a day. And those aren't necessarily back to back, 4 to 5 hours a day.
Yeah, like I could work. I mean, I've gotten more efficient over time. Like in the very beginning, I definitely worked way more hours. I mean, for one thing, I started my business on the side, which I would recommend everybody to do, because you want to have some runway, right? Like either have savings or
Yes.
have something, ideally cash flow business of some sort in works before you leave your regular job, so that you're not just running into nothing, right? Even if it's not your full salary, have something in there. But yeah, at the beginning I worked way more, but you know, as engineers, we find ways to find efficiencies. You know, I've brought on employees, I've automated tasks. I mean, now I use AI when I can to make things faster. So like all these things, now I'd probably work less hours than I used to. But at the beginning, yeah, I worked way more, but I didn't even care. I was like, because the freedom of like being my own boss motivated me. I could work 20 hours a day if I had to, just so I didn't have to work 8 hours for somebody else,
That you
you
make it
know?
work. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think I keep thinking about this as new engineers keep being graduated. Like I know the local university, I think graduates something like 200 engineers plus every spring. And I was just speaking to one who he'd worked for about three or 4 years in the industry. He's an electrical engineer and he recently got laid off. Well, not recently, 11 months ago, and there's no jobs. And I think businesses are feeling a pinch to some extent too, and finding ways to increase efficiency and to get on the ever-growing AI train. And I think it's a very serious thing that people who work for a firm or work for a company and or in engineering school have to be very honest with themselves about what their potential career trajectory might look like and to think more creatively potentially about what that is.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point you should be learning something that is the guy who can makes the AI or has something to do with the AI, not finding a job that AI could replace you for. But let's get back on topic of your story. So you're working at, you get out of college, you're working at, you said a construction engineering firm. Like, tell us what happened from there, because you have some other businesses that I'd like to talk about as well that you're running.
So I was working, for doing restoration engineering, and I really loved the engineering side of my job and the other parts of my job I hated. And so I felt this innate feeling of wanting entrepreneurship. And I sort of dabbled in it throughout the time I was working at the firm. I, started a t-shirt business with a friend that ran into some issues. I started a design company doing like sort of architectural and interior design work on the side that I got some traction with, but it was hard to manage while I was working full time. And so I sort of dabbled in all of these things. And then about 5 years ago, my brother and I purchased an existing e-commerce platform, a website essentially, and through an online broker. And then we turned it into a coffee company. So it's called Jaguar Coffee. And that was sort of like the first solid foray, I'd say, into my own entrepreneurship. And that we did on the side while we were both working. And that was kind of our COVID.
So what was the, you said you purchased this business. Mm-hmm. Was it a coffee company already or was it something else?
Yeah, it was a coffee company. It was like, it was locally based in the States. But these two guys who had started it had like a physical coffee business that they sold at markets and locally in their community. And they'd started this website to hopefully, their plan was to branch out to do more e-commerce sales. And then they just realized how much work e-commerce is and the challenges of it. And there are lots of challenges. And so they listed it on, I'm trying to think of the website, Flippa.com. It's an amazing
I've
website
heard of that.
To
yeah,
check
heard
out.
Of that.
So we purchased the website through Flippa, through these two guys. And then we didn't really rebrand it. We kept the branding and some of the images the same, but we kind of shifted it a little bit and did a bunch of sourcing for coffee, found a bunch of people to partner with and work with, and really made it our own and kind of used this base website as a jumping off point. And then really just like dove headfirst into e-commerce and SEO and all of the headaches and positivity that comes out of that. And like I said, my brother and I did that while we were both working full time. And it was a great sort of low risk, I think, entry point into entrepreneurship. It didn't cost a lot of money.
So the coffee guy still made the coffee, but you basically like handled their online sales. Does that sound right?
No, we took it over. So we moved everything to Canada. We found local, we found a roasting partner sort of in the interim. We found suppliers for ourselves. We started reaching out to coffee farms, traveling to the coffee farms. And
oh, wow. So you became the full supply chain for the coffee. Yeah. Like I was thinking You were just like, that's all in right there. But I mean, obviously then you get better margins too, because you're doing everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I think through coffee is an amazing opportunity. One of the reasons we bought it is because coffee is trade free. So it's great. It's a great product that you can sell within North America and purchase relatively easily in Central and South America. And it's tax free. So you can sell it with much greater ease from an e-commerce standpoint, because you're not dealing with all of the e-commerce challenges and then also all the taxation challenges on top of that.
Okay.
So it's an interesting market to get into. And we learned a ton about business and marketing and sales and advertising and internet sales. And it was, I think it's like an iterative process for me, because I had other online businesses or tried other online businesses. And each one I learned a little bit more. I learned a little bit more about basic coding and SEO and sales and all those sorts of things. So we've been running it for about 5 years, like I said, so it's going well, but it's an interesting market and still something that we're both sort of doing on the side as well.
Okay. So you're still working your full-time job. You start that on the side.
Yes.
What happens next?
And then I go full in on entrepreneurship.
Just the coffee, or is there anything else? Is there anything else you went full?
Yeah. So I also locally where I live, I have a commercial laundry business that I purchased. Again, it was an existing business that I purchased with a business partner at the time. And that was, I told myself when I bought the business that it was sort of my real life MBA, that it was, I sort of always thought about maybe doing an MBA or sort of formalizing my desire to own a business, and realized that probably buying a business was the best option.
I listened, a good podcast for entrepreneurs, you might listen to it, is the Tropical MBA. Have you heard of that one?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they talk about that. They're like, or even Side Hustle Show as well. Yeah, that's another one.
Yeah.
That they talk a lot about, like, I mean, if you can like buy a business and you can improve it, like you can, increase the cash flow and make your money back pretty quick. And it's just a
Absolutely.
lot
And that's
easier to start than trying to start it completely from scratch.
exactly. And that's exactly what this was. It was, we followed sort of the Cody Sanchez model of buy a boring business, and we bought
Yeah.
it, you know, the like that classic.
I've heard of that name. He was probably on the Side Hustle show.
So it's
Yeah.
by we bought it from, you know, the follow the classic path. We bought it from like essentially a baby boomer who wanted to get out of the business, who had it had been his pride and joy for 20 plus years. And so we bought it, and it was like massive learning curve, learning how to run these machines, how to do sales. And like door-to-door sales is so much different than online sales or any other sort of business development I had done to date.
Yeah.
I'd never done that. So it's like really like school of hard knocks, literally going, pounding the pavement, doing sales, learning how the industry works, the industry partners, learning the trust part of it, you know, like which
Is
partners
this
you want.
like a laundry, like you I bring my laundry there because I don't have a laundry machine in my house, or is this something different?
No, it's like it's laundry for other businesses. So like working with restaurants, hospitality.
Oh, like their uniforms. Okay, right. I know exactly what you're talking about. Okay, so yeah, you got to try to get their business. But once you have it, it's like recurring. It's like basically like a subscription. Like, you know, they're going to do their laundry every 2 weeks pretty much because they're the same schedule. So if you can get in, then, you know, you build up this, like, let's say I call it a book of business, right? It's like recurring. Like, you know, they're going to keep buying. Once you hit a certain
Absolutely.
point, you're kind of good. You're
Yes.
covering your costs, and then obviously just try to keep growing as much as you can from there. There's gonna, obviously, something like that, though, there's going to reach. You can't. It's not infinitely scalable like a Facebook or a
No.
Google or something. It's gonna, but it can still be a very nice business for an individual, because
Yes.
even if it reaches its max possible size, it could be all the money you ever need.
Exactly. And that's exactly where it's gotten to at this point is that it is a it's sort of reached you know, not its maximum, but it's reached its maximum that I have the sort of time for. I'm running the commercial laundry business, the coffee business, and then I also do my engineering consulting. And you know, the consulting is very linked with the construction season, and I live in a winter city, so you know, summers are very, very busy in the construction world here. So it sort of is ebbs and flows my consulting schedule a little bit, but balancing all of that is has been challenging, but also super rewarding, like I said, with having that time autonomy. But it's sort of the blend of all of the different factors of my brain that I really love. But yes, the business, that kind of boring business does have its limitations as far as scalability. And a physical business like that that has very expensive equipment involved in it also has a scalability sort of issue as far as financial input is concerned.
Yeah. The consulting, I'm curious, like what you do, in that role.
Yeah. So I consult for the firm I used to work for. So that worked out really well. And then I have some other consulting clients on the side and more that I'm starting to hopefully work towards working with. So right now I focus mostly on restoration engineering. So my sort of specialty within that field is concrete. So I basically fix broken concrete, mostly infrastructure. So water treatment, wastewater treatment, parking garages, those kinds of things, long-term structures, infrastructure that I fix. So my consulting sort of side is I do a lot of business development through them. I do a lot of condition assessment reports, designs, drawings, construction, all sorts of different things, project management. So it's kind of great that it still uses that side of my brain. And I think the biggest thing that I've learned in the last year, especially, is that I really do enjoy engineering and it's made me enjoy engineering again and enjoy those aspects without the issues that I had with working for someone and working in a traditional firm setting.
Yeah, exactly. And you can take on a project, and if there's some task you don't want to do, you can hire somebody for it. Like, for example, for me, I do not want to design another phone case. I've done it 100 times. I will hire one of the guys that work, I'll have one of the guys that work for me go do that for me, because I'm not going to turn down the job, but I don't want to, sit there and have to do that again. So I have them do it. But, if there's a different project, I'm like, oh, this looks really interesting design. I want to do this. Then I'll go do it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's exactly it. And I can say yes or no, and I can sort of choose who I want to work for, like, as far as clients and other people I'm consulting with, and or, I can take on projects based on my schedule too. I mean, I live in a winter place and I like to get away in the winter, so I can, take more work in the summer and the fall and sort of shift my schedule a little bit differently and maintain that time autonomy so I can escape the winter weather a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. You take your vacation when things are slow because you can, and you work more when it comes in. I mean, same with me. It comes in waves, and yeah, that's how I do it. Okay, cool. I think we've touched on everything. Is there anything that we haven't really touched on before we get towards wrapping up?
No, I think that's it. Yeah, I think it's just an interesting thing to find other engineers who have sort of a flexible perspective of engineering too. And I think it's a very, I think it can be a very black and white kind of career and kind of industry. So it's nice to know that there's other people branching out and doing creative things.
I bet you of all the people that I started working with, that were about my age at different companies, I bet you I'm the only one who's in this situation that I'm in.
Yes.
Like everyone else still just has the traditional role.
Yeah.
You could just tell from like how I was, where I was just more vocal. Like I would present ideas. Like I'm outgoing. Like most engineers, they're very reserved. Like they don't speak up like in meetings. Like they don't really try new things. Like I always got in trouble. Because I would be like, well, let's just do it this way. This seems way more efficient. And then I get yelled at because, well, that's not the way we do it. And like, I was the only person who did that. And that's what I
Yes.
noticed. Like, and like, I was like, like for example, like I'm not afraid to talk to people. Like, you got to be somewhat outgoing enough. And maybe it's not, you don't like doing it, but you have to be willing to like, talk to people and everything to do sales. And like, no other engineers I worked with would be willing to like knock on doors or do whatever it took to go make sales. Right. Like,
100%, 100%.
I've had sales jobs since then. And so I just think I didn't pick the right career for me, to be honest with you, in terms of like personality. I don't have like that type of engineering personality per se.
Exactly. Yep. I'm totally on the same boat.
Cool. So last two questions. What's your number one tip?
Tip?
Yep. What's your number one tip for someone
Oh.
wants to become an engineering entrepreneur?
Talk to people. Talk to everyone. And I don't mean like going to networking events necessarily. I'm kind of anti-networking events to be forced in a room to talk to people, but just talk to people, talk to random people, talk to, everyone and sort of understand, you understand so much about the world and the market factors and opportunities just by talking to random people, I think. So go
Why
golfing, go meet people.
do you think I run the show?
Yeah,
The
exactly.
number of ideas and contacts I've made is pretty damn good
Yeah,
by
exactly.
doing this 153 times.
So that's my number one talk.
Cool. And lastly, what's the best way people get in contact with you? Throw out your email, website.
Yeah, you can read, well, buy some coffee. Shopjaguarcoffee.com is my coffee website. And I'm going to be working on some other things for me personally, some more consulting things. So that's the best place to reach me is right now is through my coffee website, and I'll get on the social media train again for me personally so I can build a better personal brand.
Very cool, very cool. Yeah, and we'll put those links in the show notes. All right, Greg.
Awesome.
Well, that was a great conversation, and we'll catch everyone next time on the podcast.